trip and a killer cult. They'll take you there. Throw you off, send you round to cross out the human and the stuff.
From the Student Leadership Conference here at the Irving K. Barber Building at UBC. We're broadcasting from the unceded traditional ancestral territory of the Coast Salish people. CATR is UBC's campus and community radio station. We broadcast across Vancouver and parts of the Lower Mainland. And you're going to be with us now for the next hour and a half, broadcasting from the Student Leadership, talking a little bit about the conference. I'm here with Madeline.
Hello, everyone. Right now you're listening to a song called A Place Called Won't Be There by Julie Ruin. And we will be back with some interviews with student leaders here at the Student Leadership Conference at UBC. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Student Leadership Conference at the Irving K. Barber Library. I'm here with Sahil. How are you? Please introduce yourself. Tell us what you're all about.
Hi, I'm Sahil, and I'm doing second year materials engineering here at UBC. And this is my first time at the Student Leadership Conference. It's been great so far. I started at 9 a.m. with, like, you know, the opening ceremony, and then I've been to a workshop and a presentation. A lot more to go before it ends at 6 p.m. And it's very exciting and it's very empowering for all leaders here on campus and around, from people all over the place.
And tell me a little bit about where you're coming from. You're coming from what organization here?
So I'm working for the Marine Drive Residents Association, the MDRA, which is just one of the many, I think, 9 or 10 residences on campus. So I'm working as part of a council for one of the residences. So it's a council of around 15 members. We organize events all year long. And of course, we are inborn leaders. So just to, you know, enhance our skills and, like, you know, learn more about it, we are here, and to gain from the SLC.
Tell me a little bit about the residence itself. Where is it? Help listeners kind of imagine where this is on campus.
So Marine Drive is definitely the most beautiful residence on campus. It's a bunch of 5 different buildings. 3 of them are high rise, 2 of them are low rise, and it's got the best ocean views from all over campus. Like, because it has got beautiful floor-to-ceiling windows, and you can see the ocean, you can see the campus. It accommodates 1,600 students in studios, 2 bedrooms, 3 bedrooms, and 4 bedrooms. So it's very inclusive and a beautiful place to be at.
And is there a common area? If I remember rightly, there's a kind of a main courtyard, and there's some common areas, and you guys have a lot of kind of common stuff going on?
Right. So we have a main commons block, which is an architectural marvel because it looks so beautiful. And then we have this rectangular grass field right in front of it. So whenever we have community events, like, you know, whatever it is, like if it's popsicle eating or, like, you know, movie nights or, like, you know, outdoor carnival nights, whatever it is, really, we organize it at that field very often. And then, of course, we have lounges in each of the buildings. And Marine Drive is also home to the Global Lounge, which is a great place to be at because, you know, it respects all different cultures and countries on campus. So really, it's like a place with so much to do and so much, like, to be a part of.
Tell me, what's your favorite activity so far this year that you guys have run?
So we had the biggest event of the first term towards the end of it, just before the exam. It was called the Yule Ball. So it was a nice event with, like, you know, a 3-course meal, and you can come with your partner and, like, you know, enjoy some jazz music and, like, you know, some good company on round tables. Like, it's a very formal, nice event just to hang out and, like, you know, the final stress, like, get rid of it a little bit. Yeah, that was a big event.
Yeah, that's great. That sounds so nice at the end of exams right before that. Yeah. And what do you guys have planned going on for the next few months here in term two?
So we've just had our first meeting this past Tuesday, and we're going to have the first full-blown-up meeting coming Tuesday. And we're going to come up as a council, then form sub-teams, divide, like, the entire term into months. And each team takes up 1 month, and then we have to do, like, 2 events per month. So we have a lot on our mind. We have, like, a panel discussion by professors, probably. Maybe a carnival with, like, inflatables and, like, you know, cotton candy. Like, you know, those are just some of the crazy ideas and, like, the things that we really want to be involved with right now.
What are some of the challenges that you guys have kind of organizing around? I mean, I think that it must be kind of difficult to organize with the residences. You know, everybody has their things. They're going, you know, they're stressed with school. They have their things they're dealing with. Talk to me a little bit about the challenges that you guys have.
Right. Like, planning an event in itself is a big challenge. But the bigger challenge after that is advertising, because, you know, this is a typical second-year residence. It's not like a first-year residence where, you know, residents are always, like, excited or, like, you know, want to be a part of an event or make new friends, because there's already people in their upper years. So advertising is a big part of what we do, and we make sure that we send our message to as many residents as possible in Marine Drive, and we sometimes even invite their friends, like a plus one or, like, people from other residences to our events, just to show them, like, you know, the great things that are happening at our residence. So yeah, advertising is the biggest challenge for us, I would say.
Talk to me a little bit. I want to ask you about material engineering. I know very, very little about material engineering. I know that the building is nearby, though, right? Tell me a little bit about your degree and what you're interested in doing.
Right. So I'm second year here, and how engineering at UBC works is you do a first year general engineering. So it's like about 1,000 undergrads in first year doing general engineering. And then there are 13 disciplines on this campus, and you have to rank them, and then you get placed on a combination of different things. So yeah, I got placed into materials engineering, and I'm loving it so far. Like, I'm taking 6 courses this term. I took 7 last term. And it really is all about, like, the materials that we use in everyday life, you know. And the good thing with engineering is that at UBC, there's a lot of hands-on experience. So there's a lot of labs that are happening. There's co-op, which is a huge part of engineering as well. And then you can help your professors with research, because materials engineering typically is also, like, inclined towards research and finding new materials for, you know, better strength and durability. So yeah, these are the things that really interest me. And why I basically chose this is because I love planes, like commercial planes, and aerospace is something that really interests me. And materials engineering is a big part of how those things are designed.
Okay, so... So with a plane, we're talking about kind of like the casing or what kind of materials go into aerospace. Describe that for me.
So a commercial plane that we would take any day is consistent of many parts, like the fuselage, like the main hollow aluminum alloy tube is just one part of it. Like, and I, from what I know, there's more than a million parts on a single plane, right? From wiring to the seats to the flooring, like, you know, to the insulation to the cockpit, like there's a lot that's happening on that plane. And with recent moves in technology, and like Boeing and Airbus, the two biggest companies are now coming up with planes which use a carbon fiber frame, which is like lighter, more expensive, but over the long period, it uses less of fuel. So there's a lot happening in innovation. And even from what I know, Boeing has recently opened its only research lab, other than, of course, in Seattle, outside Seattle, in Vancouver. So they're employing, like, I think 50 people right now. And then, so that's very interesting for the aerospace industry, that's how it's growing into Canada as well.
Yeah, that's super exciting. And so with that kind of research, you're researching like developing new materials and experimenting, and like what does that look like when you're trying to like discover new materials? Mm-hmm.
So engineering in general is a lot about the design process, and you have to iterate a lot in the design process. So we go over iterations of, you know, what we are coming up with. So there's brainstorming, there's this process that we learn in first year, and that's definitely useful. It's called C-sketching, where you sketch in silence in groups, where you sketch at regular intervals something. So you do your own bit and then pass it on after a period of time to the person next to you, and he or she has to build on your idea. So there's a lot of techniques like that we use to design things. And there's always, of course, like Einstein said, you know, you have to fail 1,000 or a million times before you pass once, right? So in that way, we're very resilient, because we just go on and on with our designs until we, and then there's a lot of testing, of course. The design is just the first phase. And we go on and on until, you know, we find something that's more suitable. Yeah.
So that silent C-sketching, so that means that you're in a group with people and it's just quietly, and you're just passing on this and letting the design kind of build itself. That's super sweet. I've never heard of that before. Okay, so what kind of stuff are you working on right now? Like, what's the kind of stuff that's really interesting you in kind of the courses you're taking and the stuff you're learning about?
Right, so this term is specifically different because we're taking all materials branded courses, unlike last term where we just had one materials course. So there's a lot happening. There's heat and energy mass balances happening. There's transport phenomena. There's pyrometallurgy, like, and also there's a technical communication course, because of course a big part of engineering is how you communicate with, like, you know, your seniors, your juniors, and everyone who's working around you. So it's really a nice combination of different things that you're doing, and like we are getting exposed to a lot more technical things than we did earlier, and a lot more into materials engineering specifically. So it's great to be learning something new every day, and like, you know, making sense of it.
So with that communication stuff, because I mean, it strikes me that if you're just silently drawing and passing things on, there's like a kind of beauty in that communication too, that you're just kind of a nonverbal communication that's kind of coming through the design. What are the other kind of factors in communication when you're working on a kind of a design or a project like that?
Right, that's the beauty of like university and education itself. You know, it's the interdependence of faculties on each other. Like, for example, in engineering, you wouldn't think communication is important at all. But like from something like the Department of English, you understand that, like, you know, there's so many ways to communicate with your peers. Like there are memos, there are emails, like, and there's also this one thing that we learned. It's called an elevator pitch. And it's literally a pitch in the elevator to someone. Like, you know, if you're presenting an idea, it's like 60 seconds of you presenting your idea and convincing them about, you know, how it's the right thing to do. So there's just so many ways, you know, and there's so many technicalities, and like there's such a variety. Like there's no one right way, especially when it comes to something like communication, you know, which is like an art in itself. So it's great learning these things alongside, of course, engineering itself.
Do you have an elevator pitch that you could give me about SLC or about one of the workshops that you went to this morning? Am I putting you on the spot if I do that? No. Okay, good. Okay, ready? Okay, go.
Okay, I'll go for the SLC. Hi, sir. My name is Sahil, and I just attended the SLC. It's a student leadership conference held at the University of British Columbia, Vancouver. Is the largest one in Canada with 1,200 delegates every single year, and just growing larger and larger. It's already in its 15th year. And it's a great way to imbibe leadership in yourself and let it grow. You know, like even if you think you're a leader, then let it grow. If you don't think, you may be surprised, because you'll discover the leader in you. there's so many workshops and presentations happening throughout the day. It's like almost a 12-hour event, and it's really energizing, and it helps you in every single way possible to become a better person. So for next year, I suggest you sign up.
I'm convinced. I'm convinced. This elevator it all makes sense in this elevator. I'm totally convinced. The SLC is exactly what I need to go to next year. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I think we're going to take a short little break. We're going to listen to Swabian by Birthday Bitch here at CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the SLC conference.
Just fine before I met you. I drink too much and that's an issue, but I'm okay. Hey, you tell your friends it was nice to meet them, but I hope I never see them again. I know it breaks your heart. Moved to the city and I broke down crying. 4 years, no calls. Now you're looking pretty in a hotel bar. And I can't stop. So baby, pull me closer in the backseat of your Rover.
look as good as the day I met you. I forget just why I left you. I was insane. Stay and play that Blink 182 song that we beat to death in Tucson. Okay.
Hi there, this is CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Coast Salish people. My name is Josh. We are here at the SLC Student Leadership Conference at UBC. It's the biggest in Canada. It's a huge event. So we're broadcasting here, playing some music, hanging out with students. I'm here with Sahil, who is one of the participants at the conference. And before, we were talking about material engineering, and we were talking about aerospace engineering, and we were talking about the residents on campus and all the stuff that's kind of going on campus. And he gave a fantastic elevator pitch for the SLC conference. So now I was thinking of talking about how the break went, because it is the first week back at school. Always exciting times to be back at school in the ice and the snow, second term, spring term. What did you do over your break?
Yeah, so unlike last time, this time I decided to stay back in Vancouver, because where I stayed literally takes one day to go there. It's 15 hours ahead, so there's a ton of jet lag. So what we decided is, because I haven't, and my friends also haven't really explored the city, we decided to be out of residence every single day. So, like, the first day we went to an escape room, you know, like, it was a five-star difficulty escape room, and we had just 45 minutes to get out of it. And we were in the fourth room when time ran out, and we thought we did pretty well. But when they came in, they said, you just finished 50%, and we were heartbroken. And we asked, like, you know, what's the average? Like, you know, how do people usually fare? And they're like, oh, you're the average. So we felt a little better. And they said, you can start at this checkpoint, and they can give you 45 more minutes, and then you can try solving it. And then we did that, and then in the last 2 minutes, we finally cracked it. So that was the first day of holidays. That was really, like, you know, it was intense. And then, of course, we went to Enchant, which is the biggest light maze in the world, in downtown Vancouver. It was a thrilling experience, because there was just, like, lights everywhere. And then they had, like, you know, snow pouring in from the top, like artificial snow. So that was very, and, like, real water, though. Yeah, so that was very nice as well. Then this other day we went to the top of Vancouver Revolving Restaurant, which is also in downtown. And we were lucky because amidst all these snow days, that day was like bright and sunny. So we had great views of Greater Vancouver, like in the ocean, and of course UBC as well, which looks gorgeous from wherever. Yeah.
And from the snow up there too, from the Revolving Restaurant, that's gotta be a sight. So this was like every single day you guys were out and about. That's great. The Vancouver has there's so many weird nooks and crannies in Vancouver. What was kind of the weirdest thing that you saw kind of on your travels around the city? Was there something that really struck you? It was just like, what is going on here?
Yeah, so like we were out on the 26th, which is like the largest sale day in Canada. It was Boxing Day. And you know how it's so peaceful here in Canada. Like, you know, people are usually like, you know, very calm and like, you know, everyone's just going about their own thing, like not like, you know, punching each other to get a TV or something. But one day, like on that day, this couple was fighting, and it was not like two different people. They were a couple and they were fighting over which TV to get. And like, you know, they were a little loud in Best Buy, and then everyone around them was just like staring at them, and they went on and on for 10-15 minutes because I was in the store looking for something and I could just hear them off the top of my ear all the time. Yeah, nothing weirder than that happened.
That is bizarre though, like just a decision over what TV to get. I mean, like there's a, you just get the TV, like just get the TV that you want to get, or just like let your partner get the TV they want to get. I mean, that seems like making a big deal out of, you know, whatever. So I wanted to talk to you about kind of how you got interested in aerospace engineering. What was it like growing up for you that made you so, or what were your experiences growing up that made you so into planes? Do you remember flying a lot as a kid?
Yeah, absolutely. Like when I was a kid, my parents used to travel and we used to take a lot of vacations like in and around Southeast Asia because that's where I live. So yeah, I used to travel a lot on planes, and like the moment I entered and like I could consciously realize that I'm on a plane, like it's always been an intriguing concept, you know. And like, of course, in the initial years when you're growing up, you know, you feel the pain in your ears when the plane's landing and taking off, right? So I found it very irritating. I was like, you know, I'm gonna figure out what this is all about. And like as I've grown, I've like, you know, learned more and more about commercial planes specifically. That's what I'm interested in. And I watched this very famous show which airs on Nat Geo, and it's called Air Crash Investigation. So I have countless episodes. Probably if you air one, I'll probably know it. So every time I watch one of those episodes and I learn why a plane crashed, like, you know, it gives you so much more knowledge. And what's really funny is because now every time I enter a plane for travel again, I feel a little more scared because I know what can go wrong, you know, and what can't. And then so I do a little bit of looking around myself. But it's really assuring because, you know, like, you know, a plane crash is it's not going to happen. You know, like you're probably going to die on the sidewalk or in a car crash rather than on the plane. It's that safe, the industry right now. And I want to contribute to make it even safer in the future.
And yeah, and there's something like really striking too about this idea of plane crashes. I mean, plane crashes in a sense are like these failures in leadership. But then there's also kind of this, I mean, I guess it's like you're seeing that as a space where you can also contribute and do something to kind of mend it. But I mean, I don't know, what do you think about the significance of plane crashes? Like they're a really big kind of event when they happen.
Yeah, what's really sad is that, you know, humans, all of us create these beautiful planes that can fly in the air, but the maximum number of plane crashes that occur in the world today, a big chunk of them happen because of human or pilot error, you know. Sometimes it's pilot error, sometimes it's human error, the people who take care of the plane. Like, I was watching this one particular episode, and the problem was really persistent. So and it was one of the airlines I fly, so I was really scared. I'm not going to fly that again. it was like a jumbo jet, the queen of the sky, the most iconic plane. And something happened to the bottom of the plane while it was landing. Like, it struck the runway by mistake. So, of course, it suffered scratches. And the procedure at that time, the correct procedure should be to replace that entire panel on the plane. But what they did instead is some painting and, like, some, like, covering up instead of removing and, like, putting a new one. And the effects of that were seen just not a day or two or a year or two, but 20 years afterwards when that part slowly, slowly wore off and finally gave up. Like 20 minutes into flight, and the entire plane collapsed in midair. So it's really about, like, you know, taking care up to the highest quality of standards, like, you know. And many of these international agencies, like the IATA and Skytrax, that's their main goal, like to help airlines around the world, these international big plane carriers, to become more safe.
So it's kind of, yeah, the deterioration over time is kind of, it's a really scary thought. So you're, before the break, you were telling us about how you work with the Marine Drive Residents Association, and you know, living on campus. I was wondering if you could tell listeners a little bit about maybe some advice about housing on campus, and what's that been like?
Right. So housing on campus is a big deal, really, because there's so much that's around campus as well where people can live. But ideally, as long as you can, I'd definitely suggest living on campus. It just makes everything so much easier, you know. It's not about just being able to live off campus and manage your courses, because at university you can do so much more than courses. Like, you know, I'm working for Marine Drive Residents Association, as you said, and also for this crash course company called Beat Your Course. Like, so the closer you stay to campus and the better you can organize your schedule, the more things you can be a part of and the faster you can grow, just like I'm attending the SLC right now.
Right, absolutely. And in terms of, you know, eating food on campus, I know that's a really big thing for a lot of people. I mean, you know, getting the groceries or going out to eat. What are your suggestions for people eating on campus?
So, contrary to popular belief, first year residence cafeteria is actually very nice food. And you realize that only after you're out of first year, you know, like you are cursing it throughout first year. But then when you have to move out and you have your own kitchen, you don't want to cook, you realize that food was heavenly, you know. So, and I'm not much of a cooking person, so I never make use of my kitchen in my apartment, at least. So I'm eating out, like, you know, at different restaurants on campus. And for that, what I'd recommend to upper years is take the UBC card plan or the Savings Plus plan, where you get discounts at campus partner locations, which is basically almost all restaurants on campus, instead of paying with your debit or credit cards. But of course, the most ideal thing you can do is go for groceries, you know, cook. I think it's a big stress buster and it'll help you a lot with your relieving your courses.
Wait, what's your favorite place to eat on campus though?
I like the Point Grill because it's at Marine Drive. It's literally where I live. And their menu, it evolves every single term. So, like, they change it. Of course, they keep the iconic items on, but then they change it every single term. And the food, like, the quality is pristine. Yeah.
The Point Grill is actually very, very good food. I will say that. Like, really, really good and just, like, solid ingredients. I will say, though, my favorite place to eat on campus is the deli. Absolutely, the deli is out of this world, right across from CITR. And everybody goes there from CITR, too. And the sales, when the sales happen on Friday, everybody runs. Like, it's madness in the deli on Fridays after the sale. Are you doing any research with your degree? Are you working on campus at all?
Yeah, so much of last year I was just, like, you know, sort of settling down at university, and so all I was doing was just my courses. But this year I've exponentially increased my participation in things happening around campus. So I've joined a bunch of clubs, and one of them is called the URO, the Undergraduate Research Opportunity, and it's a club where you can just, like, pay $10 and then you can be a part of a program called the RECS. Where you're paired up with a mentor. So they have 80 mentors every single year, and then you check their bios. It's mostly for science and biology students, but now they're, like, you know, encompassing more faculties. They've gone into engineering, they've gone into arts and forestry and things like that. So they're growing very fast. And then you choose and rate your mentors, like, rank them when you apply. And in most cases, you get your first preference. So I'm working with a civil engineering mentor right now. And what we're working on is multi-purpose, multi-use reservoirs and, like, mathematical modeling of the valuation of water in it. So it's, like, a completely engineering discipline, like, you know, how we can distribute water. And we are going to take a case study of BC Hydro, which is locally located, and so, you know, it'll help everyone around.
That's really cool. So that's the idea of reservoirs being the place where you're containing water and how to contain that water and using it for hydroelectricity. So in that case, you're working with a prof who's doing their own research, and then you're kind of taking a bite out. Is that the idea?
Yeah, it can be, your mentor can be a professor, it can be a PhD student, can be really anyone, like, depending on your preference, and you can read that totally about them. Also, other than that, now what's happening within the Department of Materials Engineering is also, like, a second year research program initiative, where our upper years are taking the initiative to make this program where they match second years with professors who actually teach us. Because a big part of what professors do is research, not the teaching. And so in materials engineering, people are doing, like I said, things, research on aerospace and aero design, or, like, on, you know, like, biofuels or, like, biomaterials, and also, like, on parts for the body, like limbs, replacements and things like that. So it's all sorts of things. And so this research project will really help us to, like, you know, make a document and, like, learn how the research project works and, like, accordingly figure out whether you like research or you want to stay away from it.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. What are you feeling so far in terms of of liking research and I mean, it is, I think that for a lot of people and myself included, looking at academia and seeing the research that's being done, sometimes it feels very insular and contained, and then other times it feels really you know, like you can do some really serious and some really good work. What are your plans kind of going forward?
Yeah, I definitely think I'll always be involved with research on and off, because a big part of what we do is, like, you know, taking cues from research papers that we find online, you know, and it really takes a lot of effort to make those. And, like, you know, the fact that we're using them to make materials or planes or, like, anything at all in the real world that you see just shows how big of a project that it is, like, to make a research paper in itself that people can take cues from and make all sorts of things from. So that's definitely one thing that I'll keep true to myself and be connected with.
Absolutely. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, some more talk. The song we're going to play now is Never Do Anything. It's Aristic by the band Be Afraid, off of their album Never Do Anything. Here is CITR 101.9 FM.
Let's listen in as one poor soul tries to find something good to enjoy on the radio. Let's see here, God, ugh.
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Ugh.
Everybody.
God, this is awful.
I climbed up the mountain, climbed back down again for you. I climbed up the mountain again for you, and then I climbed back down, climbed up.
Isn't there anything?
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 Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody.
You're listening to CITR 101.9. Broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Thank you.
This is CITR 101.9 FM. My name is, I'm here at the Student Leadership Conference at UBC. CITR is the campus and community radio station. We broadcast live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Coast Salish people. We are located in the ground floor of the Nest at UBC campus. And today we're doing a live broadcast from the Irving K. Barber Library with the SLC Student Leadership Conference, which goes on every year. It's a really big conference. I'm here with Sahil, who I've been talking with for a little bit, and we just had somebody else joining us. Do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Maxine Leong, and I go to school at Langara College. I'm a nursing student there.
Great. And what brought you over to the SLC conference today? Are you with the organization, or are you coming to learn more? What's the plan for this Saturday?
I'm kind of like free-floating. I came here last year and I was just so inspired to come back. There's just incredible speakers every year, and yeah, that's really why.
I want to hear, because I didn't ask Sahil about this before, but I want to hear a little bit about the conferences that you've been, or the talks that you've been at this morning. Do you want to start?
Yeah, so like there was the opening ceremony, of course, and there was a keynote speaker. So how it began was there was a performance by UBC a cappella, which is like, you know, a music group, and they were absolutely stunning. And then we had a speech by our president and vice chancellor, President Professor Santa Ono, who's new as well, and he's a very inspirational figure. Like, you know, he takes selfies with students, like he just mingles, like, you know, he's not at the top, he's really with you. And then we had our first keynote speaker, Professor Michael Griffin, who's also the first professor in residence. He's a professor in philosophy, I believe, and he literally enacted Socrates or something like that. I don't know what he did, but it was so inspiring, like, you know, just watching him over there, it was a true inspiration. And since then I've been to a presentation by an 18-year-old entrepreneur who basically started his business when he was 15 from Halifax, and now he's a first year at student at UBC, and his office is literally his dorm room in residence, and he's making big bucks. He's met Justin Trudeau, he's met Barack Obama, he's doing everything great. And after that inspirational talk, we went for a workshop which was about self-control and, like, you know, how you should live well and, like, eat well and do things well. So our presenter Denise, who I know, she talked about an acronym, SELFIE. And it's about, like, sleep, eat, like, you know, live. So, like, they all have a full form, and it just makes so much sense. Her presentation was absolutely great. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I really enjoyed a lot of our keynote speakers today, but especially Michael Griffin talking about imagination and how powerful it is to leadership and bringing that to leadership culture, which I'd really love to bring back to Langara College. And then I went to a workshop about making the culture supportive, I guess, in any form. And we talked about some really awesome things like empathy, accessibility, validation, which, like, as simple as a thank you goes so far. So that's something really, really powerful I took away.
That's great. Yeah, we were having a conversation before about communication in science and in business, I think, too, and like how to manage that and kind of the difficulties and the nuances of that. Another interesting point you brought up was like creativity being this like kind of central thing to leadership too. How do you guys sort of like connect with that sort of creativity? What is kind of your relationship with creativity?
Yeah, I mean, like, in a university background, it's very easy to become monotonous and, like, you know, become robots where you're just doing your assignments, your homework, you know, like, giving finals. But we really need to take time out, like, you know, like, in the workshop also, we discuss about, like, just walking down 400 steps, going to Rec Beach, you know, 10 minutes, don't listen to anything, just the waves, and reflect, and, you know, like, think about what you're doing right, of course, and what you're not. And so creativity is a big part of it, because no matter what major you're in, you have to think constantly of new things and, like, you know, evolve as time goes by.
It's such a broad topic. I mean, creativity to anything in life is so important. But really taking time for yourself and allow yourself to be creative, because I think a lot of students get caught up in, like, whatever academics they're in and, becoming, like, monotonous, like, robotic. But being creative, whether you express that through dance, singing, theater, binging on Netflix, like, whatever it is, you know, taking advantage of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good point. There's all these different ways to kind of connect with it. And I mean, yeah, there is something kind of tricky about the university and about that, about how to balance those things. And Yeah, I was wondering, I guess with like Michael Griffin, I've heard about his work before, and he's like a really interesting example of a professor who's kind of getting part of the community and being with students. And I was wondering if you guys had any thoughts of maybe starting with you just about Langara and like how you found the teachers there and kind of the relationships that those kind of relationships form when you're kind of learning stuff and then also trying to be part of a community.
A great thing about Langara, like in the nursing program at least, we have a really small, we have small class sizes, so the professors are really want to connect with you on a personal level. And Michael Griffin definitely has that experience, which he brought. But I don't know, we talk a lot about power imbalance and how that's so important to understand and really to relate to people and really try to level the playing field wherever it may be to bring equality to everything.
And what about you at UBC? How do you feel about kind of, I know a lot of things that people have voiced, and I've felt this in the past, is when you have professors that are really caught up with their own research and then maybe a little less concerned with teaching and kind of finding ways to connect and get something from the courses regardless. Do you have any kind of thoughts on that?
Right. So what happens at UBC, and this is a recent trend I feel, is like professors have stopped posting their office hours, and instead they have changed to like, you know, walk-ins or like by appointments, because it really is all upon the students. You know, it's because the professors sit there for 1 hour of office hours and no one walks in, and they're just sitting and waiting for someone, you know. So they thought, let's change it a little bit and like, you know, like let the students take the initiative. And if you want to ask a doubt or like, you know, whatever, like look up for some books or finals by appointment, just go to them. And then they'll help you. Like, you know, you have to go to office hours to do well on the course. That's absolutely essential. Yeah.
Going back to what you were just saying about power imbalances and thinking about leadership and thinking about leadership, you know, I think that I think everybody would sort of agree with this one, that leaders that are abusive of their power or, you know, when there's, it's kind of difficult when you have these hierarchies of leadership and you have somebody that's just kind of taking control and kind of the I don't know, the pitfalls of that when you're talking about leadership. And what do you think, I guess, what do you think about, you know, the nuances of leadership and leading in a way that isn't going to kind of reproduce these power imbalances? Do you have anything to say about that?
That's always something that I've always struggled with, but it's really hearing your team members out and using your skills of empathy, sympathy, and then validating what they have to offer, because it can be always really difficult when there's somebody who's really shy or somebody who's really overpowering, and you're constantly being hearing that overpowering voice, but not really giving that opportunity to somebody who's a little bit more shy. So it's really giving an equal opportunity to everybody on your team to present their ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. Sahil, do you have any experiences in instances where you've been part of a team and you had somebody, you don't need to name names, but where you found that, you know, there's kind of these like, yeah, these maybe gaps in leadership and that these, where leadership kind of goes wrong. Do you have any experiences like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, of course, a big part of engineering is working in teams, you know, and so we've always worked in teams of like maybe 5 to 8 people. And there was, I mean, it's not a bad experience or anything, but like in our first year in APSCI 101 and 101, we have to make small teams of 6 people each. And so when we work and we have to make projects, so we have to make a chair that's completely built of cardboard or a claw that is autonomous. You can't see and it has to pick up objects. Like, so completely like crazy things built from scratch. So what we have to really do is like brainstorm, see sketch, do things like that. And so there's a lot of creative difference, like when we meet the first time, because first of all, we don't know each other. We're meeting for the first time and then, you know, and we're starting a project and, you know, everyone has different views. So, but the big challenge and the beauty of it is that we incorporate a little bit of what everyone has to say and make the masterpiece at the end. So it really is all about respecting each other's opinions and like, you know, gaining from each other. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What about you? Do you have, what kind of experiences have you had of leadership that have really kind of struck out at you as being particularly, I don't know, these kind of power imbalances you're talking about?
That's really tricky. I can't think of like anything on the spot.
What about instances where you've been like, oh, this is a good leader. They know like exactly what they're doing. Do you have something that stuck out in your head that you kind of like see as maybe a model or a mentor?
Even today, the people in my workshop, they were incredible speakers, and they really took control of the room, but really gave us an opportunity to speak. So again, like leveling that playing field, like even physically coming down to our level where we're all sitting in chairs, like they took a seat and they wanted to hear what we have to say, but really facilitating a discussion rather it being like a lecture where they're kind of barking at you. So it was a good experience seeing that.
Yeah, absolutely. We are here at the SLC conference at UBC, the 2017 SLC conference. This is CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Josh. I'm talking with some students here. We're going to take a short break to play some music, and then we'll be back with some more chats with student leaders. Thanks so much, guys.
Come to this, conquer this symphony.
Hey, my name is Josh. This is CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the SLC Student Leadership Conference. CITR is a campus and community radio station. We broadcast from the traditional ancestral and unceded territory of the Coast Salish people. Today, we're doing a live broadcast from the Irving K. Barber Library at this really massive leadership conference with 1,200 delegates from across the Lower Mainland and from beyond, really. I'm here with Sahil and with Max, who we are chatting about leadership, and we're chatting about all kinds of things. We also were thinking about maybe talking a little bit about podcasting, maybe getting a little self-referential on the air. What kind of podcasts do you guys listen to?
So I'm a little old school, and I must admit, like, this is a confession. I did not know about podcasts until earlier this year, you know, when so I'm into Bollywood, which is like the Indian film industry. And this one actress that I really like, she's my favorite. She's called Kareena Kapoor. One of her I follow all of her interviews, and one of these interviews was supposed to be on a podcast, you know, and I, of course, I wouldn't want to miss it. So I was like, you know, what is this podcast? And then I looked it up online, and then, of course, I caught up with it and I heard it fully. And so that's when the podcast business started, and now I'm listening to them on and off all the time.
And what about you, Max?
Mine isn't as awesome as that. Or is it? I listened to a comedy podcast by Jake and Amir. They were did like a bunch of web series with College Humor, a YouTube getup, I guess, and they are hilarious. It's a advice podcast, and they just give awesome advice, really hilarious, a little bit explicit sometimes, so turn in the podcast, Mom, but really hilarious about romantic relationships and like friendships, all these random things. Yeah,
I think advice on the radio is like a really funny and like kind of great thing. And in some ways, whenever I hear advice on the radio, I'm really inclined to take it. I find it very, very, I don't know, in some way trustworthy.
Yeah, totally. Like, you want to hear it and you're like, you want to take it in, but then there you remember, you're like, no, they're definitely unqualified to give advice. So that's what makes it so much more fun.
The thing is, like, I'm very, like, I definitely wouldn't read like a advice column, like, I mean, maybe I'd read it for fun and like a newspaper, but I definitely wouldn't take any of it too seriously. But yeah, there's something about radio that is really striking. We were talking before about voice and about good voice, and how that's kind of an interesting part about radio. I think radio also has like a lot of, I don't know, it's a really like shared kind of thing in that way. This, you know, national radio, and it has a lot of maybe political implications too. What are your kind of memories of growing up with radio? Did you have radios around? What was that like for you, Max?
Yeah, grew up a lot with radio. It was mostly influenced by my dad. He was a big music fanatic, so we listened to jazz, rock, classical, all, and like every radio station under the sun. So I have like really fond memories of listening to Rock 101, and then especially when like AC/DC comes on, which is super ironic, and I don't know if I should say this, but like I went to a Catholic school, so we're like listening to Hell's Bells and Thunderstruck, and I was like, this is definitely not what I should be listening to, but my dad's like, let's get ready to learn, like get pumped for school, guys. And my brother and I are just sitting in the backseat like banging our heads all the way to Catholic school. So many fond memories. Just, yeah.
AC/DC is also one of those bands that gets a lot of radio time, like for probably not good reason. They're always on the radio. What about you, Sahil?
Yeah, I mean, like, all of the radio, like my mom, when she was my age, she used to do a lot of radio, like, you know, in the city that she used to live in. And that's what's brought me here, because I want to know all about radio and how it functions. But also, like, the most intimate interaction that I've had with radio is when I used to go back home to my home city. And my grandparents used to just, you know, sit around me and, like, you know, bring out their radio and play their favorites. And we used to just, like, you know, all just have such a nice and cozy atmosphere and, like, you know, have a blast listening to those songs. And, like, you know, that was the most intimate time I've ever had with radio around.
Yeah, there's also this weird sense that, like, your attention is on the radio, but it's also kind of, like, with the people you're around, and you kind of, like, share that attention together. I was telling Sahil on the break that I'm just learning how to drive, and I think there's also something about, like, listening to radio when you're in a car that's really striking. Have you taken any big road trips or good drives listening to radio or podcasts, Max?
Yeah, I went on a long, well, I thought it was a long road trip to Cranbrook, BC, which is, you know, a good 10 hours away. And having four millennials in the car that have very different music tastes can be a little bit, there can be conflict, if to put it nicely. So some of my friends were like, yeah, let's listen to like R&B, hip hop, like rap. And we're like driving through mountains. I was like, this doesn't really like match, but that's cool. And then one of my best friend's boyfriend, he's the best. Best friend's boyfriend. He was like, let's listen to Dean Martin. And I was like, that's amazing. Yeah, because I don't listen to a lot of Dean Martin and a lot of like smooth, sensual, but like really jazzy stuff. So I was, that really painted the picture of the road trip, which I liked. Very eclectic mix.
Yeah, there's totally something when you listen, the music that you listen to on a trip, like really does paint it like a lot. So you mentioned before that you're also learning how to drive. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I learned it when I was back home, like which was over last summer around June. And then I learned on a manual car because my dad was like, you know, you're not learning automatic because then you're not really learning. You have to learn manual no matter what you drive later. I was like, okay, fine, I'll learn. And so I went to driving school with the driver beside me and the clutch and everything was also on his side. And really all he was doing was like, you know, like shouting and like, you know, barking at me all the time. And I was like, you know, can you stop like pressurizing me? I'm driving right. Like, you know, he was just shouting at me all the time. And I was like, you know, I'm driving in traffic. I'm driving fine. Like, you know, and then, okay. So then I had the ultimate test with my dad by my side without the clutch and without anything in our own car. And I did perfectly fine. So I'm pretty happy with that.
That's great. That's great. I also was driving with my dad last week and I almost, like took a turn really fast and like it was super bad and like he had been so gentle and nice with me the whole time and then all of a sudden when we were taking this turn he was like whoa and I ended up going into a snowbank, which was really fun. But it was good. I really do like driving a lot. It's a fun thing to do. Sahil before was talking about experiences of like, yeah, being really into commercial aerospace stuff and what are your experiences like flying? Tell me about some more about your experiences flying, because that's always also, I was flying last week from back home. What has that been like for you? I mean, other than being maybe a little scared of things failing.
Yeah, it's insane, really. I can just talk to a friend all day about like funny flight experiences that I've had. And it was just like not before last year that I took a long haul flight. And last year was the first time because I was coming all the way from Taipei to Vancouver, which is like a 12-hour flight, you know. So I was not prepared for it. And I was like, okay, let's just see. Like, you know, I was matching all the jet lag and everything. And there was this one electronic weighing scale, you know, which you just attach to your luggage and you can lift it and it just tells you the weight, you know. So that was one thing I was looking for. And I knew the plane, the airline I was flying had it. So while I was going back, I asked for it. And then they're like, okay, yeah, you can have it. But you have to have either US dollars or the Taiwanese dollar because, you know, it's a Taiwanese airline. And I had only Canadian dollars and not even a credit card because I was not 19. So I was like, oh my God, I can't have it now. So I was like, you know, when I was coming back, I made sure I had US dollars with me. And then I paid to them. So the price for this is in Taiwan dollars. And so they converted it for me. And it was like some 7.587, like so many decimals. So I just gave them $8, you know. And I was like, you know. They're like, oh, what about the change? Like, we'll give you change in Taiwanese currency. I was like, yeah, that's okay. I'm fine with anything. And then they're like, oh, it's so complicated. Like, you know, it's 0.2 something, I don't know, Taiwanese dollars. Then I was like, you know what? Just keep the change, you know. It's okay. I don't need the change. And then they're like, by this time, there are four air hostesses around my seat arguing why they have to give me the change. And I was arguing why I don't have to give the change. It's okay. And they finally agreed after like 10 minutes and everyone's staring at us. And I was going to sit. And then this one air hostess comes running down the aisle with like 10 coins in her hand. She's like, I found the change. I'm like, oh, wow, great. That's the most recent funny experience I've had on a flight. Yeah, it's insane. So many experiences.
Flying, yeah, it's just like a weird, like, in the sense that you have all these people that are just kind of thrown together in a plane. And all of a sudden, like, I do feel very, very, like, bad for like air hosts and in a lot of ways and like stewards. Like, it's just like a pretty weird space to be in. Max, have you done a lot of flying?
I have. It's funny, we're touching on so many different topics that I'm like, oh yeah, I totally relate. It's funny, my dad just flew to South Africa today, so I was like, oh, have a safe flight, Dad. But yeah, I've been lucky enough to like fly to South Africa, which is where my family's from, places to the States, not anywhere in Canada, which is weird enough, but over the summer I went to Europe and it's just like an amazing experience. But I always have like really awesome time flying or really bad time flying.
Okay, bad time flying story. What are we talking about?
When I fly, I never have an appetite. I mean, like, I always have an appetite. but it can never be satisfied. So I'm like eating and eating, and like these people beside me will literally like look over at me and they're like, man, she eats like so much, like she keeps on asking for snacks and like drinks and like, oh, she's so high maintenance. But I get like really sick on planes too, and I almost threw up on my brother once, and it was just like a very bad experience, and he just like shoved like gravel down my throat. So it's like, it doesn't get that bad, but yeah, we've had some pretty bad experiences.
I've never gotten air sick before, but I can imagine it's like also, you know, a very bad place to be sick. Eating on planes, I'm a big fan. I'm a really big fan of eating on planes. Sahil, food on planes, any advice? What do we do? Do you pack food before? Do you get what's the go-to?
Well, if you don't want to stay hungry, definitely pack food other than having the food on the plane itself. And definitely pre-book your meal if you can, you know, to the flavors that you like, you know, whether it's chicken curry or like whatever, vegetarian or whatever, oriental. Just get it pre-booked if you can. Because, this brings me to another bad experience. Like, you had one and we had one while we were going on this triangle trip from Jakarta to Kuala Lumpur to Singapore. And this was on Malaysia Airlines before the tragedies that happened to it and it became so defamed. It's still a good airline. It's still a very good airline. And so we were on this trip from KL to Singapore. It was just a one-hour flight. And then we were halfway through at cruising altitude. Like, and they had just taken the meals back. And there was this very misbehaved person. And the seatbelt sign was on. Okay, everyone's supposed to be strapped into their seats. But he was just standing in the aisle with a plastic glass of Coke, like leaning on a seat, like, and right behind us, like where my parents and I were sitting. And we were already seeming to be irritated, you know, because anything can happen at any moment. And suddenly the plane decides to vertically drop like 1,000 feet. It just fell from the air like 300 meters, and there was a shout in the cabin, and when everyone realized, like, people were holding hands already, like, you know, it was just automatic reaction. And then the plane got control of itself, but like the cabin crew that was in the aisles taking the food back, they were all on the ground. The G forces were that bad, and the Coke was all over my dad's pants. So yeah, that was a terrible experience.
I just remember this hilarious time when I was younger, like 9 or 10, and my brother was like 14 or 15. My parents had bought like a 6-pack of Coke. And like, I don't know why we were so keen on drinking so much. And it was like 2 days before we were supposed to leave Rome. And we're like about to go through security. And we have this 6-pack full still. And like, everybody knows no liquids through security. Hello. And then security was like, do you have any liquids? And then my mom's like, no. And I was like, Mom, we have all that Coca-Cola. Like, should we drink it or should we throw it out? And she's like, we paid like top dollar for this Coca-Cola. It is very rare here. We are going to drink it. And we sat outside security chugging 6 500-ml bottles of Coca-Cola. And I was like so sick of it. I was like 2 sips. I was like, I can't do this anymore. We're like crying in each other's arms, just drinking all this Coca-Cola. I was like, can't we just give it away? They're like, no, it's going to be suspicious. And that was like such a funny, funny memory of flying.
That's so gross. That much sugar too. And like right before a flight and you're just sticky with Coca-Cola. Oh my God. Airports are also like just such, like, I don't know, even just Heathrow is the one always that strikes me. Like, Heathrow is just like so big, and there's like just like a mini city going on. And then there's like another airport like quite close to London called Stansted, which is like kind of more for flying around Europe. And that airport is just like super like, just, I don't know, it's like doesn't have a proper roof, and like it's just very like a lot of like temporary setups, and it's just like always such a, I get like a very good chuckle every time I go, just like, why is this, how is this like legal, and like everything's just like very thrown together ragtag styles. I was wondering, because I've been thinking about this a lot, are you folks considering staying around Vancouver? And also, I think, you know, at a student leadership conference, there's these kind of questions about like, where are you going to take these skills? And like, are you thinking of staying around Vancouver or going, you know, I think with traveling a lot too, the possibilities open up a lot. I don't know, Max, what are your feelings?
Well, with nursing, I am so happy and really lucky to be able to fly around and work in different places and but keep that job constant. So I hope when I graduate, I'll be able to work, make some money, and gain a lot of experience in Vancouver hospitals. And then after that, maybe fly to London, or I've heard there's a lot of opportunity in the Middle East, but or Australia even. And hopefully I can make my international debut after I graduate.
International debut, I love it. What about you, Sahil?
Yeah, also it's very similar with engineering as well, you know, like it's spread out all across the world because there are projects coming up, big, small, all sorts, and like they're multidisciplinary. So like a project will involve a civil engineer, a mechanical engineer, a materials engineer, and a chemical engineer all working on just one building or an airport or like, you know, a factory. So it's very nice, and I'm very open to traveling around the world, like, you know, exploring, because I love traveling. It's a big part of what I do. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to play another song, or maybe a few, we'll see. This one is a suggestion from Max here. The song is by David. Actually, do you want to introduce the song? Please.
It's by David Beckingham. He used to be a part of Hey Ocean, a Vancouver local band, and he just has such a beautiful voice. I think it's called In Spite of All the Damage I've Done, I think. So yeah, enjoy.
Great, CITR 101.9 FM.
If I wanted to say to you, thank you.
Hi there, this is CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Coast Salish people. My name is Josh. I'm here at the Student Leadership Conference at UBC. This is a really, really big conference, 1,200 delegates, that goes on every year. We're broadcasting live from the Irving K. Barbara Learning Center, which is the library here at UBC. I'm here with Sahil and with Max, and we're just wrapping up the broadcast here. I wanted to ask you two guys maybe like some takeaways from the day so far. It's halfway through. There is more conference stuff to go, but yeah, maybe some just like final thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great place to be right now because, as I said, it's an entire day-long conference, and it's like so much of valuable information that's put into like, you know, potential leaders or current leaders who want to expand themselves, and like, you know, all kinds of workshops to choose from. I think 20, 25, 30, I don't even know how many. There's tons of things that you can do. And, like, it's an absolute pleasure to be a part of this.
And Max?
Yeah, I feel so grateful to be here. But something I've really taken away is just the power of imagination and creativity and really, you know, going outside of your comfort zone and breaking those boundaries to reach the potential you didn't even know you had is something that a lot of people discover here. And I feel like I'm really building on that, being even in this interview and just spending time with other great leaders.
I wanted to thank you too so much for sitting in on this live broadcast and talking to me and being on air. It's a little stressful, but both of you were spoke super well, so thank you so much. This is CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the Student Leadership Conference today. You can find this in podcast form if you go to our website. That's about it for us. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you.